It's Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell, joined as always by David J. Laura and Philip Michaels. Hi, guys.
Hi. This is Blondie's Rapture, right? We were just listening to Blondie.
Toe-to-toe, dancing very close, barely breathing, almost comatose. Wall-to-wall, people hypnotized, and they're stepping lightly. Hang each night in rapture. Fellas.
Yeah.
This episode is based on the Blondie song Rapture, from what I can tell.
I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure.
I think Phil's right.
If I were to keep reading the lyrics, there'd be stuff about fish and dead kids.
And dead kids beckoning you on to the,
and the
wrecked plane beneath the sea.
Yeah.
This is, in fact, season 6, episode 11, Rapture. Season 6.
Yeah. Boy, does this have a season 6 episode.
Oh, man. I had the Fat and Happy era of Magnum. The We're On Against the Cosby Show and... about to go off the air, era of Magnum. Yeah, David chose this one. Explain yourself, sir.
Because Halloween...
David chose it, or should we say that it's, Blair chose it?
I'm going to say I was possessed by Listener Blair.
So we did a... No, don't blame Listener Blair for this one.
No, don't blame him for your failing.
So we were going to do... So work... Life got really busy for me, and for Phil, but especially for me.
Yeah, me too.
But you too. And so this was originally going to be sort of like part of the spooky season, because David was like, oh, there's another episode with a ghost kind of that we could also do in addition to the
sort of a ghost.
The one we did last time.
Sort of.
And it is, oh, David, it is so loosely. I mean, it is.
Kind of.
In my defense, I was scanning the episode list at magnum-mania.com.
The official Bible of Magnum Podcast.
Magnum Podcast. And I saw a ghost and went, hey, that Halloween? Sure.
Sure.
And the lesson I have learned is from now on, when I come up with one of those, when I go, ooh, I will look to see who the writer
Check
is.
Check the writer.
If it's Bruce Chervy, as this one is,
it's a no.
I'm going to stop.
No. Hard.
That's a hard no.
Is the spookiest specter of them all.
I feel like there's a, I don't know if you call this a TV trope. You probably would. You could put it on that website that's full of TV tropes called TV tropes if you wanted to. That it's the, I guess it's a ghost or is it kind of show where there's like a ghost and the main character is like, oh, I think maybe it was a ghost. And by the end, you have this sort of like, well, maybe it wasn't a ghost. And then there's usually a tag where you go, oh, or maybe it was.
I believe we call that episode The Lady on the Beach.
Well,
viewers.
So this episode at points feels like it's going to be that kind of lazy. But no, in fact, this episode takes the appearance of the ghost child pretty seriously throughout as a reasonable thing that might happen, that a ghost child might haunt various people.
And provide helpful clues.
And provide important... Well, that's why the haunting is happening. It's like, find out who killed me by following me deeper into the ocean.
Tom Stewart killed me.
I've run some lab tests. Here are some hair samples.
Here is a police file.
I talked with Shay Fong. Here's my phone.
I talked to the shoeshine boy. He had good information. I'll fill out my expense report. It's spookily high.
Yeah.
Well, Inspector Drebin, the sky, you know.
So, anyway, Magnum is diving. This also has lots of diving scenes in it, which you can find boring or peaceful, depending on how you feel about diving scenes.
Yeah, an uncomfortable amount of diving scenes. I mean,
do you like Thunderball? If you like Thunderball, you'll love Rapture, because Thunderball's a movie that has endless underwater scenes that are, again, soothing, peaceful, or boring, depending on your temperament.
Stuff happens in Thunderball, and it's got a Tom Jones theme song.
Mm-mm. Do you like seeing Tom Selleck and Roger E. Mosley's stunt doubles swimming in I can only guess is an aquarium tank.
It is.
There were no stunt doubles, believe it or not.
There are a lot of fish in that tank.
So
it was filmed...
It is them, but it was filmed, yes, at an aquarium that has a sort of like Reefs of Hawaii big tank.
Because as someone who, I haven't gone scuba diving in Hawaii, but I have done snorkeling, and you don't see that many fish on a dive.
No. So that we get a lot of that, but then on this dive that Thomas and TC are doing, which I think, you know, thumbs up to the idea, like, we're in Hawaii, this would be a thing that people could do. This, yes. Like, I'm sure that they had meetings all the time in the Magnum writing staff about, like, what are unique Hawaii things that our characters can do to take advantage of being in Hawaii? And one of them is probably to do some scuba diving. So they do their diving here, and Magnum sees a kid just who's not wearing scuba equipment at all. He's just hanging there, and Magnum's like, what? And the kid's like, come over here. And Magnum's finally 100
feet deep below the surface of the sea.
So he's like, and he ends up kind of panicking, and he gets oxygen from TC, and they go to the surface, and he's like, I saw this kid. And so there's this question of, like, oh, did he have nitrogen narcosis, the rapture, as Higgins calls it, and tells a story about Lieutenant Crosley, and they're mounting a wildebeest head, and all of those things. But then
my favorite moment, yes. Jason, just to jump in there.
Please do, this whole episode is kind of a blank for me.
As Higgins is telling the story.
A kid appeared before me and said, come, continue watching this episode. And I was like, no, I need to surface.
I need to surface
for a while. I'm not sure I believe what I'm seeing before my eyes right now.
A couple of things here. As Higgins is telling the story of Lieutenant Crosley, he imagined that he was in an underwater village of women. And Rick, yes. who is there, for reasons.
Wildebeest head
supervising.
Mountain, yep. is really into the idea that there is a village of women under the sea. Like, he is, Higgins, give me the exact coordinates.
Yeah. How much nitrogen do
women?
I need to have?
Were they half fish? What?
So that's uncomfortable.
How do I induce the narcosis? Because I want to go to there.
Did they want to be a part of my world?
Mm-hmm. Perhaps this was not common practice in the 1980s. I can assure you it is now. Again, I enjoy a good snorkel. When you're under the water, don't grab onto the rocks to guide you.
No.
There are ecosystems down there you don't want to disturb with your grubby little paws. Secondly, those rocks can be sharp.
That'll cut your hands right open.
And there are things living in the rocks that are sharp.
Yes.
So don't do that.
Don't do it.
Magnum,
yeah.
You dummy. That's
thank
is
you.
The end of the segment.
That's been your public service announcement.
So, Magnum, you dummy, a public service announcement.
But after doing a little legwork, Magnum realizes that he knows who this kid is, and it's a kid who died in a boat explosion in the past. And his mother.
So we learned this through the greatest character that Magnum PI ever introduced. And only used once, and I'm referring to Johnny Obitz, the Obit writer at the local newspaper. He's fantastic.
Shouldn't it be Michael Obitz?
Yes, he's the power writer of Obitz. He's always doing deals. So that Obit appears in
Mr.
my
Mr. Obitz.
Data. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Let me show you my Japanese sword.
So we end up meeting
Sadly, Johnny Obitz has one scene and never
that's
appears
it.
Again.
The mom has
R.I.P. Johnny Obitz.
Has had visions of her dead child, and you would think maybe having the trauma of her child and father both blowing up in an explosion of a boat would be enough to drive her to drink, because I haven't mentioned it yet, but she's a drunk.
Oh, yeah.
But... No.
Not a very convincing one, I would
know. Gosh, no.
She's a television drunk character. but I would also say that what it turns out is, actually, it's the haunting by her child that seems to have really pushed her over the edge and into the Foster Brooks
into
wing
the comfort of the bottle.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking
she looks
she's...
at Magnum and says, "Well, look who's here."
Yep.
I was thinking she's no Foster Brooks.
No, but she's doing. Yeah, it's drunk
but
acting.
She's trying.
She's doing the drunk
she's
acting,
trying.
Which is like, "Why, Magnum? Why are you here again?
Right. Oh,
my boy, I my boy. The ghost." And then there is a great moment too where Magnum says, "You know, oh, I saw your son." And it is kind of fun where she's like, you've seen him too. I have also seen him. And but later she's just like, I saw him again. You ruined my life again, Magnum.
And I did like that scene because they're in a bar. There are these like louvered blinds there, and he's standing there and he's talking to her, and you see the Island Hoppers van drive by and drive yes. off the show. And it's like yes. TC going, I'm having nothing else to
yeah,
do.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
I'm good.
Forget I thought it. that was so lazy. I realized it's 1980s TV. They figured no one's ever going to watch this back
no,
on
no chance.
Clear TVs and
discuss
things,
them but, and dissect them on future
but,
to
holy
be
God,
invented
that is
media.
Quite visibly, you don't have to do the Zapruder film on this.
No.
That is the Island Hoppers van clearly driving by in the background.
I'd like to think I would have noticed that on an 18-inch yeah. Sony Trinitron with cathode ray tube.
Possibly.
In 1986.
Yeah.
So so he investigates at the charter. He goes diving with the mom, and they're talking about it, and she says, do you think maybe we're both crazy about all of this? But Magnum then is driving, and a plane flies right overhead, like it's trying to, I don't know, kill him. From a nearby, but not really, just fly overhead, and that freaks him out.
If you've ever seen North by Northwest, remember the scene where
yes.
Cary Grant is chased by the crop dusting plane. Imagine that.
Oh,
scene.
I thought you were going to say, remember that scene where Cary Grant is driving down a road and a crop duster flies by, and he goes, oh.
Yes. Well, I was going to say, imagine that scene. But Cary Grant is, instead of waiting for a bus and totally defenseless, he is in a Ferrari.
Yes.
And the plane drives by, and there's no real danger
nope.
or threat.
That's
apart
it.
From the plane coming, attacking from the sun, like the
yeah.
Japanese Zeros
well,
hold.
If the plane had gone on like a strafing run or something, then that might have been something.
Yeah.
But it just goes
yeah.
overhead.
It's just flying.
But it spooks Magnum enough that he tears apart Higgins's library.
Another ridiculous scene.
Again, why? Why? Like, he's not an ape. He's a vaguely intelligent human being.
And he is specifically looking for pictures of a plane. And we're told, like, this has the work of Proust and Balzac. Is he, like, picking up remembrance of things past? Going, well, maybe he's remembering past planes.
Maybe if he'd eaten...
Going, ah!
If he'd eaten a damned Madeline, he'd have remembered how to look for books.
That was
the
one of my
also
favorites.
Rises, much like that plane that rose to the sun. Oh, maybe there's a picture in here.
I really enjoyed Remembrance of Past Planes, actually. That was very good.
uh-huh.
Planes
and,
that
and
I have known.
Like, they have a gratuitous slam at the Dewey Decimal System.
Yeah, well I mean, it's
okay,
well, first off,
no,
Higgins.
We're on Spouses of Librarians Corner. How do you,
so, that's
so
right.
Let me tell you,
how did you all feel about this?
I mean, the Dewey Decimal Higgins speaks the truth, the Dewey Decimal System. It's not great, but why would you expect one man's personal collection of books to be organized via Dewey Decimal anyway? It shows an amazing lack of understanding of libraries by Thomas, because one personal connection would never be organized in that way.
And yes, personally, you know, my first reaction was, oh, Higgins is ahead of the curve on reorganizing with Library of Congress classifications.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Because, you know,
solid.
campus library, that's what I get steeped in. And looking at, again, Magnum-Mania, I did enjoy how there is a note, this is a complete reversal from a few episodes earlier, where Higgins is upset by Magnum's filing system and says, haven't you ever heard of the Dewey Decimal System?
Oh, continuity.
So,
well, no,
so
Higgins just...
It's Bruce.
Higgins read a thing about how all the faults in the Dewey Decimal System, and he said, oh, I shall...
Maybe.
Never...
Yes, and then read a story about how he had passionate lovemaking with the librarian.
They're just
which is,
books.
Which is kind of a nice
says.
Moment.
There's, just
yes. Oh no, that's
books.
Apart
that's,
from Johnny Obits, this is my favorite my favorite part of the episode is Higgins
and,
remembering his night of passion and Magnum is momentarily shooken from his madness that prevents him from changing his clothes at any point
at
during
any point.
The episode.
Oh my God. Yeah,
Seth,
no, I
by the end he must smell
well,
quite
like
horrible.
When, earlier on when he bumps into the mother at the lagoon and he's still wearing the same clothes and they're talking and she goes, wait, you've been here all night? And he goes, well, I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What? So is this like, explaining why he never changes his clothes. This, that, but the library scene, that's the point where I actually have written down in my notes, why is it that whenever it's a Bruce Chervy episode, everybody is acting like 5 degrees dumber than usual? Mm. It's like aliens trying to put together a Magnum story and not quite sure how the characters act or speak.
Or an AI, a generative
or
a human, AI.
Possibly. Or an AI. Oh my gosh, that
right?
might be it.
So that's there's
Magnum AI.
Hmm. Oh. He's got 7 fingers
oh,
on
man.
One
there's,
hand.
They're just books, he says. Oh. And we have the annals of the Anglo-Hawaiian Aeronautical Enthusiast Society. Put that one on the list of the many Anglo-Hawaiian societies. Harry Granger, he's gonna have all the
and Harry Granger is the guy who bought the charter company from the debt from the dude who the grandpa who died with
yes.
the kid.
Grandpa who died with the kid on the boat. This is
well,
so
the,
again.
The
there is a
wouldn't sell. That's
there
why.
Is a sort of lead. That's being followed by Magnum here. That it, by again, it's a ghost lead, but he's trying to follow it somewhere because theoretically this is a detective show. Although, guys, this is one of those episodes where I thought to myself,
"Oh,
is this a detective show?
Nope.
Is this a what?"
Nope.
It's like they're like, "Yeah, well, he's following a lead to what from a ghost?" Yes. Okay, fine. All right. So,
who's your client? A ghost.
So,
and they hangs a lantern on it where TC is going, "Maybe you're overworked, Thomas." And he says, "Yeah, but you said I was overworked when I saw Michelle's ghost and it turned out she wasn't a ghost. And then you said I was overworked when I saw Mac's ghost and he wasn't a ghost."
I literally
it turns
wrote
out he was back from Tales of the Gold Monkey because
yeah. Oh. Well, you
so,
were about to say.
So David, I literally wrote in my notes, "Hang the lantern, Michelle and Mac," because that's what they're doing there. It's like, aha. But other times I did it and it turned out that those totally unbelievable things happened in the episode. So
that's
maybe
right.
It will happen again. This is after TC fakes a helicopter emergency and could get his license revoked so that Magnum can snoop around, except Magnum gets out first. As the guy, the mechanic, is coming over to the emergency landing plane, and the guy's like, "Hey, you the pilot?" And Magnum goes, "No, I'm looking for souvenirs, merchandise, auto parts, things like that." And he's like, "Oh, just go in the hangar." What? While we're having this emergency, why don't you just point me in the right direction? I don't understand that blocking at all, just talk to TC and then Magnum would sneak out. I don't get it. It's so weird.
Well, part of it is the excuse that when he first shows up to talk to Harry Granger, played by, it's that guy, Eddie Barth.
Yes.
Who, even though it's all a contiguous universe and he played Myron on Simon and Simon, he's not the same guy now. But Harry Granger goes, "Oh, you're the guy from the FAA, aren't you? Yeah, okay, come on in." And Thomas goes, "Sure I am."
Sure.
And then the guy from the FAA shows up, and so he sneaks out. And so it's like, okay, he has screwed up the one chance he has to actively, like, say, "No, I'm a private investigator, and I'm looking into this thing," like a sane person would.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. No, just all this lie. That's what I say.
But
always
now it's like, okay, we need an excuse to go back. Oh, it's so stupid.
Although, again, in a recurring segment that I like to call Roger E. Mosley, the unsung MVP
of
Magnum P.I., there's the wonderful moment where the mechanic walks over and TC is very nervous about being found out and says, "Oh, have you worked with a lot of helicopters before?" And the mechanic says, "No, truth be told, I've never, this is the first time I've ever been up close to one." And the grin, the grin that
so
breaks
good.
Out on Roger Mosley's face where he goes, "Well, now I get to snowball you."
Yeah, and he literally is like, "Oh," and he's got the thingamajig and the do-do-do-do-do, and then he wiggles something and he's like, "Oh, fixed
it. It's all
great.
Fixed.
All like, good."
And shake your hand and thanks for your help, friend. And that was a wonderful little bit of character moment that I thought was a little sprout shining up through the barren field that is Rapture.
And of a scene that does not need to exist.
No, not at all.
Now, speaking of recurring segments, I would like to introduce a segment here.
Yes.
That is tangentially related to Tales from the gold monkey. Well, no, early on in the episode when he's explaining I was diving and I saw this kid, you know. And I think it's TC who says, what, the boy from Atlantis? Which leads me to Tales of Man from Atlantis.
Yeah, sure.
Which very specifically did not have a "the" in the title. It was not the Man from Atlantis.
Indeed.
It was just Man from Atlantis. Unfortunately, we have run out of time for Tales from Man from Atlantis.
Well, that's too bad because Man from Atlantis, starring Patrick Duffy, was like my favorite TV show when I was seven?
Yes, seven or eight. It was it was 1977.
It was cool because it was as close as a sci-fi show as existed at that point, which was
And barely. If you look at the credits of the show, it's largely done by veterans from Star Trek the original series.
Ah, see, makes sense.
It's produced by Herb Solo and Bob Justman, and a bunch of the writers were all Trek writers.
About a guy who could breathe water.
Yeah. And boy, he had like the stupidest way of swimming.
If you were, he did, which I always tried to duplicate in the swimming pool, and you just sink like a stone. But I would say if you really enjoyed the water scenes in this episode, man, get yourself some Man from Atlantis.
Go to YouTube.
Lots of water scenes. Okay.
And you get Victor Buono as the recurring villain nemesis of the show. He's great.
Yeah, one season.
I would think that not the waterborne villain Man from Atlantis.
Oh, no. He's
very
just
much
large,
an ad-log villain.
He lives underwater. He's like, what's his name in The Spy Who Loved Me? But he's actually better. He's a better villain because he's Victor Buono.
One season. All right. Hey, guess what? You know what a great thing to do is when you are looking for leads in your ghost investigation? Type them into a VIC-20, which is at the estate, which is what Magnum does. It's got the ready prompt, which means it's ready for a basic program to be typed into it. But instead, Magnum types the name of the person he's looking for and I guess gets information because suddenly the estate is a computer database. Don't think about it too much. There's just a scene where Magnum types things into a computer while Higgins watches and then he gets information. Where does it come from? What is this computer? What is it connected to? Don't ask these questions.
All that scene is missing is Magnum screaming, "Computer, enhance!"
Yeah, or like, oh, we're
isolate
in.
Torso.
We're in, right? Like they dialed into the police. Well, I assume that there's some expediency going on here because we have seen in other episodes, including Computer Date, an episode in which there is not a computer date. that you go there are scenes where Magnum goes to the police station and they or to the Navy. And they do a little query, and it gets him his data mining searching that he needs, his Google searches of the 80s, to get his next lead in the case. Here, they are too lazy to do that. So it's a VIC-20 on a TV screen at the estate with Higgins looking over his shoulder as he types in a name. And
they have wasted so much time in this episode. When you said, you know, it's like you thought it was going to be lazy the one way. It is a lazy episode on almost every level. And yet it expends so much energy and flop sweat being lazy somehow. What? When you said Magnum AI, and that's it. That's exactly it.
David, this episode is so lazy, it looks at the work required to do the lazy ghost plot and goes, I don't need to do that. So in the end, what is happening? Drunk mom, it turns out, drunk mom
is at a Mexican restaurant in Honolulu, apparently.
We figure it out.
Well, margaritas.
If
Megan really
figures out that the dad,
although she does the thing that bartenders around the world hate, where it's leave the bottle, because she's got the giant bottle that is like $100 if you ever get the bartender to leave you the bottle. They won't
because how would they charge you for it?
Yeah,
this is right. Stuart Wellington has gone into this in great detail on the Flophouse.
Exactly.
It's like, how would I even do that?
It's
really stupid. So it turns out that the dad was couldn't get the grandpa of the kid who owned the charter to sell the business, and so he blew up the boat, thinking that he was going to essentially. And again, this is not a defense. at all. It's literally, well, honey, what I was going to do is just kill your father because he wouldn't sell this thing and make us a lot of money. And so I just kill him and then we'd sell the thing and make a lot of money. But and, then and our son.
It's your fault.
Then the kid snuck on board with his grandpa. And so they both got blown up.
It's. No, it's her fault for letting the kid go with the grandfather.
Because he was supposed to do chores that day, but she said, ah, it's a lovely day. Go
That's
with,
right.
Go with your grandpa. Yeah.
Well, and this shows you just the quality of the dad, Stephen Parker here, who is like, yes, how dare you not allow our child to stay away from my murder that I was doing of your father.
Exactly. I was also distracted because he looks kind of a Steve Garvey, Jim Palmer hybrid. So I was very distracted by that. Steve Garvey running for the Senate here in California. And that's why I won't vote for Steve Garvey, who murders children. Thank you.
and old grandparents, too. Apparently.
Yes, so he's trying to force the drunk wife onto his airplane.
Yes.
Because it turns out he owns an airplane like the one that flew out of the sun at Magnum, although... We never find out if that's what happened.
Or if it's just a ghost airplane. Right.
It could be a ghost airplane.
Too lazy.
Kid under the water flying an airplane.
Too lazy.
So he's trying to force the wife on the plane.
Like this. Who could
and then, she doesn't get on the airplane. So he gets on it anyway and tries to close the door. And you have the scenes of Magnum trying to pull the door back open and trying to hang onto the plane as it's moving so that you have an exciting scene for the little clips before the opening credits.
Yep.
And then. In the actual context, he just kind of lets go and the plane takes off.
Yes.
So what happens is, I just want to step through this a little bit. So the confrontation happens.
There's a lot here.
He's gonna take her with you. Magnum reveals the truth. She's upset. And also, again, I just can't emphasize this enough, very TV drunk. Very, very, very TV drunk.
Hey, look who's here again.
Yeah.
It's that guy.
So then he's going to just escape in his plane. Right. And Magnum says, "Oh no, I'm not going to let you do that." And tries to pull the door down. At which point, this is what happens: the guy gives Magnum a kick. Magnum flies backward because of a kick, and then he closes the door. But also at one point, he has a flare gun that he points at them menacingly.
The flare gun is the juiced of the scene.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, man, don't light me up with that flare gun.
Yeah, it's the fallacy of the talking killer, right? He's like, I got a flare gun and I know how to use it. And you're like, yeah, but why would you do that? And then anyway, but again, we haven't gotten to the piece de resistance of this episode. You're hearing us say, this is a lazy episode. And you're like, I don't know. It doesn't sound that lazy. Wait for it.
Here it comes.
Here's the poochie. So the guy kicks Magnum off the door and then closes the door and takes off. Magnum voiceover. He was never found. His plane was lost at sea.
Yeah.
And I literally in my notes, I wrote Deus Ex off screena.
Yeah. Yeah, so the answer is the bad guy gets away, but Magnum says it's okay. They never found him. Which first off, I choose to believe that the child and grandpa murderer is in Tahiti now.
Yes,
his ill-gotten charter money.
That detective never caught me. Ha
ha. And second, it is the episode being like, we're done. It's done. Okay.
We've hit the 50-minute mark. Wrap this thing up.
But no, there's one more scene. We have to have our little tag, which is Magnum goes diving again, and he finds the little boy, the ghost boy's necklace, and presents it to the mom.
And he grabs it and shakes his fist.
Yeah.
The Pacific Ocean is notoriously compact.
It's very small.
And very easy to find things in the Pacific Ocean when you lose them.
There are
not currents. There are not...
In the lazy ghost narrative, this is him going back to where he saw the child, which is the spot the child is haunting because of the necklace, and then the necklace remains there as the only trace of the child, who apparently is now, because his father has been captured by his father slash murderer has fled.
Lost at sea.
And is lost at sea. He's obviously released from his haunting, I guess. Mm-hmm.
I think all this episode was missing was the little ghost kid, like, giving Magnum a thumbs up at the end.
Yeah.
Like, and replaced by Hayden Christensen, like, at the end of Return of the Jedi.
David.
Yeah,
What?
What have you done to
us? You get the Lister Blair Award, David. Bruce, that's what we're saying.
I took it on myself. As soon as I saw... We got to the opening credits of the cast and crew, and I just went, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I did that, didn't I?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I did.
Yeah, you did.
Thank you, Bruce.
I'd like to introduce a segment. it's called...
Screw You, David?
No. speaking of Lister Blair, I'd like to introduce a segment called Letters from Lister Blair.
Oh, very nice.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's true.
No longer the worst person to suggest an episode, David.
Not this time. Hi, David, Jason, and Philip. Hope you three are doing well. I love the review of Billy Joe Bob, and I appreciate you suffering through it. I know it's not the best, but it was great fodder for laughs, and I loved hearing you guys tear it apart. This brings me to my next piece of business. Yesterday, I was listening to the new episode Flashback, minding my own business, having a wonderful afternoon, when suddenly I was taken aback by an insult from this, and might I add, first-time letter writer, listener, Brandon. I can take the insults from you three masters of the podcast.
A new rivalry has emerged.
But when fellow listeners take shots, I must stand up for myself. To criticize me and in the same sentence request a season 8 episode is just outrageous.
Yeah, that's got to side with listener Blair here.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
To appropriate Higgins when he overhears Magnum playing the saxophone. How fiendishly deceptive of you three. I could have sworn I was hearing the emasculation of a large rodent. To my great surprise, I see the sounds are emanating from listener Brandon. Oh, shots fired.
Oh, my.
In all seriousness, hearing that listener mail made my day, and I appreciate any and all jokes at my expense. Heavy is the head that wears the listener Blair crown. Well, your head's lighter this week because David's wearing it. Thank you for all the great times, and can't wait for more. All the best, listener Blair, yes.
I would like to make one correction. I'm actually wearing two listener Blair crowns for this one.
Well, you're wearing one crown.
Go ahead.
And
tell me I'm wrong.
There's a floating boy wearing the other crown.
There's a scepter.
Beckoning you onward.
And the necklace.
Always good to hear from listener Blair, our most beloved and most hated listener.
Yes. Yes, both of those things are true.
Yeah.
All right.
Lord.
Before we go, I just want to mention another letter we got. I'm not going to read it. It was a lot of detail, and we're not going to get into it here. But we had a wonderful letter that we received from listener Kevin, who works as an assistant director in the business. And it was a fun letter because...
Really great letter.
Listener Kevin worked on a Don Belisario series with a lot of people who worked on Magnum P.I. and had
This Don Belisario series.
Not
I should point out.
No, on a more Magnum. On a more recent, and I'm just gonna I don't want to get into too much detail.
No,
Lister Kevin's bio. Yes, actually, a few Belisario shows, but worked with people who worked for Magnum and had some fun anecdotes and stories of Magnum PI and listens to the podcast. So thank you very much, Lister Kevin, for writing in. That was a great letter. We appreciate.
Yeah, that was wonderful. Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful way to wake up this morning.
Yes, if you also worked with Don Belisario. I mean, sure. Send an email, magnum@theincomparable.com. You know where to find us. We'll thank you too. But right now we thank listener Kevin. Thank you, listener Kevin.
Thank you, listener Kevin.
Which brings us to my last prepared segment for this episode, which is what is our next episode going to be?
What is our next episode going
to be? Well, it's going to be based on a suggestion in a letter we received a little while ago from listener Ted.
Oh, listener Ted.
Father Ted.
And listener Ted recommended Basket Case. Mm. Basket Case. I believe I read listener Ted's email a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I seem to recall that.
Yeah. And so we're going to just go, we're going to follow listener Ted to Basket Case.
It's a sports episode, I believe.
It is.
Always an interesting time with Magnum when they get sporty.
Season 3, episode 15, so check that out. But that is the end of this episode. If you remember, okay, the moral of the story, if you're diving and a ghost child beckons you on, go back. pretty simple, really. Common mm-hmm. sense, really. Mm-hmm. Go back. And if David J. Lore comes to you and says, I've got an episode for you to watch, go back.
Just
don't listen.
Check the writer. Just check the
don't
writer.
Don't do it.
There are good ones. I've picked good ones. Just, this is yeah. one also.
I would like to thank my co-hosts, Phil Michaels and David J. Lore. Bye, guys.
I would have gotten away with it, too, if it hadn't been for that meddling kid.
Yes. Ghost child? Oh, no!